Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.
The NutriMedical Report, and of course we have Harley Schlanger here from Berlin, Germany, and he's got an interesting comments from the transcript of Roger Stone's presentation to the Schiller Institute, and I'd like you to get right into it, because I think it's important for people to realize, and we made some interesting dialogue just a moment ago, that it doesn't matter if it's left lies or right lies, it's just the beast. And the globalists, their eventual outcome is they want to reduce the world population, they don't want to stop thermonuclear war. They want trade wars to become physical wars. They don't want to control the environment to protect the Earth from incoming space objects like asteroids. They don't want to actually collaborate to extend human lifespan and get a new vision of what the future economy of the world will be when we have high tech and artificial intelligence, and wants to start spreading out to the stars. No, it doesn't matter if it's a left lie or right lie by these global maniacs. It's just a lie. And that's why it's really neat to hear the positive comments from Roger Stone about at the Schiller Institute about what's going on here. Go right ahead.
Well, what would be interesting to many of the listeners who still are stuck in the old paradigm of left and right is what Roger Stone had to say about Lyndon LaRouche in his address to our conference.
Right.
Now, LaRouche in the 80s was called by conservatives a left-winger, communist. They said his wife Helga was an East German agent, and at the same time the Democrats were saying LaRouche is a Nazi, he's a right winger, FBI, CIA agent, all these kinds of stories. Now Roger in 1980 ran the Reagan campaign in the Northeast. He was the campaign coordinator for Reagan.
Right.
And he ran into LaRouche personally a number of times because Lynn was on the ballot in New Hampshire in the Democratic primaries for president. And
right.
Reagan, on several occasions, had discussions with LaRouche. And what Roger reported is that at the time, he thought LaRouche was a little exotic. That was his term.
Right.
But he's come to see over the years how right LaRouche has been.
Right.
And he said, when he asked Reagan, what do you think of LaRouche? Reagan said, well, I don't agree with everything he says, but I agree with a lot of what he says. Now, that should shake up a lot of people who are caught in this left-right paradigm. But then what Roger said beyond that was even more interesting. His statement on Russiagate was basically what I've been reporting on this program for the last year, that Russiagate was designed to stop Trump from talking to Putin. It was designed to prevent Trump from having a meaningful cooperative dialogue with Putin and Xi Jinping.
Exactly.
And that Trump ran for president because he was opposed to the war and regime change policies of the George W. Bush and Obama administration. And then Roger came back to the New Silk Road and he said, I've come to see the wisdom of Lyndon and Helga Zepp LaRouche in promoting the New Silk Road as a policy for the United States and the world. And he said he's presented these ideas to President Trump. He thinks that there is a grounds for pursuing them by the Trump administration. And he's sure that the hysteria against Trump is in part because Trump shares these views. And Roger finished by apologizing that he couldn't be at the conference in person. He did this on a live hookup, but he apologized saying he couldn't be there in person because of the attacks on him by Robert Mueller and the special counsel's office. Now, right. In addition to Roger's presentation, there were several other very fascinating ones. Someone who I've just gotten to know, who is the program director of the Russian International Affairs Council, which is the think tank for the foreign ministry of Russia, basically. He spoke at our conference and gave a very strong statement about the importance of the Trump-Putin meeting as a possibility to address some of the more serious problems, such as Crimea and Ukraine, such as Syria, but also, he said, to take up a whole new arms control package. Now, the next day, the Trump administration announced that they're hoping there'll be discussion of START an INF treaty at the Helsinki conference. So we're actually in the forefront now of creating the news.
Right.
There were officials from China who spoke about... by the way, the Russian official said one other thing. He said, we don't want a multipolar world. We want a multilateral world. And he said, the problem with the idea of multipolar is it still has this conception of poles, of competition. It still fits in with geopolitics, as opposed to the idea that each nation can pursue its interests without infringing on other nations' interests. And that was also the theme of the spokesman from the Chinese government who addressed our conference. Now, there were many, many more. There's an ambassador from Nigeria who gave a very strong statement about calling on Europeans, please work in Africa with the Chinese. That's how you solve the immigration question. And then we had an up-and-coming leader of the new government in Italy, Marco Zani, who's a member of the European Parliament, who endorsed Mrs. LaRouche's proposal that the European government should address the refugee crisis by working with China to develop infrastructure and economic policies in Africa that will keep refugees there. Now, this conference took place 2 days after the European Union conference, which supposedly resolved the immigration crisis. What did they do? They kicked the can down the road, which is what the European Union always does. What they said is, well, we're not going to... They gave Merkel one concession so that Merkel could keep in power and keep the agreement with her sister party, the CSU, so she wouldn't have to quit. What was the agreement? That someone who's already registered, an immigrant who's already registered in another EU country, can't then migrate to Germany. Now, that doesn't address the migration problem. It doesn't address the difficulties of people who end up migrating to get away from war and poverty. It does nothing. And so immediately afterwards, the Austrian chancellor, who's now this on the six-month rotating basis, the president of the European Union Council, came out with a very strong statement saying, let's work with China. Let's work with the Italian government policy. Now, one final note on Europe, and this is something that should be very interesting for people. In Poland, the government just took a sovereign decision that it has the right to retire Supreme Court justices who don't uphold Polish law. And so there are 70-something Supreme Court justices, and the government just fired 12 of them. With what they said is that when a justice is over 65 years old, he can only be reappointed if the government accepts him. So they used this to get rid of 12 justices. The European Union said this violates EU laws, therefore it's unacceptable. So the Polish Prime Minister went to Brussels to meet with the EU to discuss this, and he was snubbed. They wouldn't meet with him. And so when he spoke before the European Parliament, he said, we don't care what you think. We're going to do what's in the interest of Poland.
Right.
And this is the way Poland, Hungary, Austria, Italy, Greece, and other countries are now moving away from the centralized control of Brussels, which is really a front for the British and German and Wall Street banks.
Right.
So what we're seeing now is you look at Trump in the United States, who's breaking out from under the control of the globalists, of the Bush-Obama policies. You look at Europe, where Merkel and Macron are basically standing alone. You look at the United Kingdom, where Theresa May is trying to stick together with Merkel and Macron, but she's not even in the EU anymore. She's got trouble from her own party.
Right.
So, and then on top of that, you have the Trump-Putin meeting coming up, where apparently there are a number of areas that have already been worked out of agreement, including on the Middle East, Ukraine, arms control, and several other areas. Then Pompeo today was in North Korea. I guess it was today, yeah.
Right.
And there were positive developments there. So the world is changing very rapidly, Bill, and most Americans have no clue about it.
Yeah, but the thing is that the people that count are starting to spread the philosophy that Lyndon has preached for five decades, that collaboration and not a multipolar world, but a multi-collaborative world is peace. All shoppers. So let's imagine here a world, say, 2050, and that is 32 years from now, less than that. Imagine a world in 31 and a half years, in 2050, where you can get on a train in, say, Ireland, and you can actually go high-speed rail all the way across the Trans-Siberian rail line all the way through to New York City. Isn't that cool? All the way across Europe and Russia, all the way across Asia, all the way across this Bering Strait, all the way across North America, all the way to New York.
And north and south also. You can go from Alaska down to some place in southern Chile because they're part of the Belt and Road Initiative.
And the north south from Europe all the way to the tip of Africa. See, Africa is very much left out. If you actually look at a real map, not an artificial map, but a real map, you could drop North America into Africa and you wouldn't find it, even the Sahara Desert. That's how big Africa is.
Yeah.
It's the only continent, both the North and South Hemisphere. That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, and what's happening in Africa, which is interesting, because we had a number of Africans at our conference, including some African officials. There are countries now in Africa that are experiencing growth rates in the 6, 7, and 8% annual growth. Ethiopia, for example. Ethiopia doesn't have a lot of raw materials, but the Chinese went in there because the Chinese aren't looking, you know, the argument is China's Belt and Road Initiative is to steal the traditional colonial policy to steal raw materials. Well, they're going into countries without much in the way of raw materials as a point of principle to prove that this policy works. And so they have the Addis Ababa to Djibouti Railroad. Now, Djibouti just opened its free trade center for the first time. Djibouti is in eastern Africa. It's at the tip of the Red Sea, opening up into the Indian Ocean.
Right.
And this is part of the Maritime Silk Road. But it means that a landlocked country like Ethiopia is now connected by the Maritime Silk Road to the whole world. And so they're delighted. When the first Chinese-built train took the trip from Djibouti to Addis Ababa, the road in Ethiopia was lined with tens of thousands of people cheering as Ethiopians were driving the train. Ethiopians were working the train. So the shift that's occurring in Africa is very interesting. Now, we had this very fascinating pedagogical model. Africa today, seen from space at night, where there are very few places that are lit up, as opposed to Europe or North America, where you see lights everywhere. And then a model, what would happen in 2050 if the Silk Road policy is implemented fully in Africa? And Africa is now lit up as Europe or the United States today. So this transformation, you know, there are going to be over 2 billion people in Africa by 2030. Now, either half of them are going to be trying to get into Europe, or we're going to upgrade the infrastructure and the water policies and so on in the African continent, and it will blossom, and it will be of benefit to the United States, benefit to Europe, benefit to the world. Now, who recognizes that? The Chinese, the Indians, the Japanese. And increasingly, I think, we're seeing this process I mentioned in Italy and Austria, where governments are saying, let's work with China to help our infrastructure, and then work with China in Africa to develop theirs as a way to deal with refugees. Imagine if the Trump administration went ahead with the idea of working with Xi Jinping to help develop Honduras and Costa Rica and El Salvador, so that people would not have to leave those countries of poverty, of drug gangs, of terrorism, could stay in those countries and live a happy life. That's the potential. And I think this is what people haven't yet figured out about the way Trump is looking at things, how you can break the stranglehold of the geopolitics. And very interesting, Bill, I'm sure you noticed this. The new president of Mexico, who's considered by many to be a radical leftist, Andres Manuel López Obrador, had a very friendly conversation with Trump.
Right.
And what did they talk about? They talked about changing NAFTA and helping to build not just Mexico, but also the Central American countries, because López Obrador said it's not so good for Mexico to have all these refugees coming through Mexico.
Right, and that's a logical thing, isn't it? People would be happy in their home, whether it's a work Bracero 2 program or cleaning up the drug cartels or helping with the investment policy to build up industry in these other countries so that we can actually have a happy place for these people to go stay rather than trying to immigrate here. We call economic refugees. They're not really trying to become American. They're trying not to starve to death in their home country.
Or be killed by MS-13 or
right, exactly. Or be enforced into gangs, exactly. By the way, we don't want that process to occur here, which is why we need to have a system of a wall, of tracking, of Bracero tube where they can't get out of their compound area where they're working. But we also need to have a system of rational immigration where we can have work visas, for example, for thousands of Chinese high-speed rail engineers that can come here for 6 months or a year and help build our rail. We need to have things that are collaborative, but we don't want our intellectual property stolen. But we do want to collaborate. For example, the Chinese took technology from Bombardier out of Quebec in Europe, and they advanced it further. We want that advanced technology to come back here, and we want our engineers to collaborate with them on all kinds of things in the future, including, you know, intelligence systems and so on. We don't want 5G everywhere. I personally want fiber optic everywhere in America and get rid of this 5G craziness that wants to have, you know, autonomous vehicles flying all over the place and so on. I think it's dangerous because it's toxic to all biology of humans, et cetera. But, you know, if we start collaborating with these other countries that do have a history of looking at this, like the Asians understand it, and the Russians even don't even allow radio and TV broadcasts beyond a certain number of watts of power, we start to understand we can build a safe future where the oceans aren't dying, where we don't have more plastic than fish in the sea, where the ozone layer is stable, and we don't have the danger of future missile attacks and war. Right? In other words, trade, not war. Trade, not war. Collaboration of independent nations at the same time that have representation, not a globalist elite that gets rid of most of the population to so-called save the planet for them and rewilding the world for the buffalo. It's craziness.
The potential for that is dawning. And that's what we saw with what Helge Zaporizh calls the Singapore model. The fact that you had these two adversarial nations, one of which is much stronger than the other, but hurling threats at each other and insults to the presidents. And then the two presidents of those countries get together, shake hands, have a couple meals, and start moving in a collaborative direction. Now, that wasn't just Trump with Kim Jong-un. It was Trump working with the Chinese, the South Koreans, the Japanese, and the Russians. And the idiots in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House who attacked Trump for talking to Kim Jong-un don't understand that this was a multilateral process, that the president reached out to these other leaders. And so they're talking about Trump as an egotist, Trump is trying to get the Nobel Prize, that's why he's doing it. They're missing the important point, which is that, as you say, we're much better off talking than we are shooting.
Exactly. Yeah, and also we're in a codependent world. It's connected to space weather, international relations, and we have to understand at some point as we spread out to the galaxy, we are going to come into not only opportunities but conflicts and danger as well. I'm going to do during the summer is a project called Imagine 2050. And 2050 involves a lot of the philosophy. I consider Linda LaRouche what I call a geophilosopher of the 21st century. People don't kind of understand that his philosophies are how to create a stable world where our intellectual property and the capacity of mankind to create energy flux density and to spread out to the stars requires on us having not only representative government and nations, but also collaborating across national borders, across religions, and across different political systems so we can maintain ourselves as a collective organism surviving on planet Earth against space weather, like coronal mass ejections happen every 150 years, asteroids and wandering black holes, or the eventual possibility of contact with advanced civilizations that may not necessarily be friendly from deep space. And the fact is that America and the world needs to collaborate. We have 11 years from now in April, the coming approach of Apophis, which is three times the size of the asteroid that struck and wiped out the dinosaurs 45 million years ago, and it has a 1% chance of it or its debris field covering millions of square miles striking the Earth. So even if it's only a tiny fraction of its debris field hitting us, it could be pretty cataclysmic, but we need to collaborate the same way as we have the very dangerous possibility in the next few years of a Carrington-style super event from the sun that could wipe out our so-called electrical-based power world when we haven't even hardened our power grid. And the main manufacturing right now for these step-down UHF transformers is, guess what? China. So if we don't collaborate with China, we can't harden our power grid against destruction by even a coronal mass ejection. This is how simple it is, isn't it?
Well, there's so many areas where it's obvious that we should collaborate, but I think the important thing, and this is what came through at our conference, is that there are people all over the world who are thinking in this direction now,
right,
who have realized, including in Europe, who have realized that the idea of peace in Europe, which, you know, the whole basis of the European Union was this phony argument that it was nationalism that led to the two world wars of the 20th century. So if you dampen down nationalism and then instead put power centralized outside of the control of nations, then you can somehow eliminate the danger of war. And what we're seeing is European nations rediscovering nationalism. I mean, one simple way to see it in a good sporting way is the World Cup, where, you know, everyone was predicting disaster in Russia, hooligan gangs, Russian poisoning visitors, Russian, good-looking Russian women seducing soccer stars and then blackmailing them. And instead, even in Britain, there are articles about the wonderful environment in the Moscow and other cities where these World Cup games are taking place. But what you also see is people who love their nations, who are traveling from Uruguay and Peru and from Belgium and other places to Russia to cheer for their teams, but recognizing the importance of brotherhood. Now, I use this as a sports analogy because sometimes people think more clearly when it comes to sports than politics. But look what's happening in Europe now. You have nation after nation voting against the existing establishment with Brexit, with the vote in Italy, the vote in Austria, the vote in Germany, the vote in Hungary, in Poland. The existing establishment is being obliterated. If you look at the Trump election, the same thing happened in the United States. The same thing happened with Brexit. So the same thing happened in Mexico. The two leading parties, the PAN and the PRI, got smashed by this guy AMLO, who didn't even have a party a year ago.
Right.
So
yeah. Well, what is this platform? Because what I've heard so far, they try to make out, the media tries to make out to be this ultra-leftist and saying everybody in Mexico has a right to become an American citizen. And he doesn't believe that. He knows that won't get...
He doesn't say that at all.
No,
he,
I know. I don't know why the media says that. What he wants to do is he wants to get rid of the drug cartels. He wants to stabilize the economy, not only in Mexico, but in Central America. So you have to deal with this massive migration across the huge territory of Mexico heading to America. The 350 million visitors a year with the busiest border on the planet is the Mexican-American border. We need to collaborate. Mexico is part of the history of America, and we can also maintain control of our immigration. We can have work, Bracero 2 program. We can get rid of the drug cartels with collaboration with this new president who's going to come in December. It has to happen. Part of the treatment of the opioid addictions and everything. And also the deep state are involved, by the way, these intel agencies in America with the specific drug cartels. That's that fast and furious, as we've talked about with Gary Richard Arnold and other experts like Cody Snodgrass, CIA munitions expert that was contracted to blow up the Murrah building. The fact is, I know this working with these guys, that there's lots to fix here, but I don't think he's too far away from Trump in terms of his philosophy, do you?
Well, Bill, why would someone run for president of Mexico and encourage all the people of Mexico to leave the country? It makes no sense whatsoever.
It doesn't. And he doesn't look like an idiot, does he? Does he look like a moron? No.
He's not an idiot. In fact, what he and Trump discussed is what are the areas where Mexico and the U.S. could collaborate to bring immigration under control. And look, Mexico, the idea that Mexico cheated the United States with NAFTA is not true. Mexico benefited from NAFTA in the short term with these plants that were set up on the border, but pretty soon those jobs went to even cheaper labor places, and Mexico lost them. And in the meantime, under NAFTA, Mexico lost their industrial base. Mexico used to produce machine tools. They used to produce steel and have an industrial sector. It was poorly paid. It wasn't managed so well, but they had it. It was wiped out by NAFTA. So what they talked about is mutually collaborating to develop the economies of the U.S., Mexico, and Central America. Now, look, AMLO, in some of the ways, you know, he has a leftist background, but what does that mean? It means he wants workers to be paid a fair wage. That's, you know, and we call that socialism sometimes in the United States, but isn't that what minimum wage is about? Isn't that what the retirement systems and other things are, that you regulate? AMLO wants a regulated economy so private sector swindlers from other countries don't come in and take advantage of Mexicans. So in that sense, he does have something in common with Trump. I think it's going to be a fairly tough series of negotiations, but I think this is actually a very interesting opportunity. Because, again, he was elected by a wave of insurgency against the existing system.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it? And the existing system, by the way, is what keeps Mexico corrupt enough that the drug cartels can operate, that the current system creates an environment to make a portion of the Mexican and Central and South American populations have to and want to migrate just to save them from starvation, or to get away from the gangs and the harassment in their countries like Honduras and El Salvador.
Also, note that there were 1,000 politicians murdered in the Mexican election campaign by the drug cartels because many, many Mexicans ran for office standing up by saying, we're going to take on the drug cartels, and not necessarily by militarily attacking them, but by addressing the question of why young people are so desperate that they enlisted in the armies of the drug cartels. So, you know, there's a lot of potential for change, and it's,
right,
you know, it's always difficult to say where it's going to go. But I think if you take this from the Singapore spirit, the model of Singapore, of adversaries coming together and working to resolve differences, and where you can't resolve differences, at least make clear to the other side what you want and what you expect from them. And if you do that with respect, then you can have international policies that will work. If you do it through threat and intimidation, and as George W. Bush did, or by Obama, by smooth-talking, while you're still carrying out the threats and destruction, All you do is make enemies.
Right. In other words, he smooth talked while he was doing bad things behind the scenes, is what you're saying.
Yeah, terrible things. Terrible.
Terrible things. So in other words, he smooth talked while he was doing horrors behind the scenes.
Yep.
Yeah, you need to have everything straight up front. With Trump, things are very, what I call, transparent, aren't they? Whether it's North Korea, or Russia, or right? We're live, okay. That happened yesterday, too. Please continue. Well, the dialogue, I think, is very, very productive. People realize that they listen to this dialogue, that what's going on in Russia with the World Cup, et cetera, that things are moving forward to a kind of a more stable world where open communication and collaboration rather than conflict and the danger of economic conflict. Like, for example, a lot of people think, oh, it's the end of the world. They're going to have a trade war with China. No. They actually slapping on these tariffs are a movement toward a level playing field and a lack of tariffs with non-tariff barriers. It's not just tariffs, it's non-tariff barriers, say, in Europe. And what Trump is doing is basically playing hardballs, like playing a card game with kids that are 12 and 13 years of age at their party. They're basically saying, hey, we can do this and this and this, but let's get rid of all these barriers. In fact, which I'm surprised that Justin Trudeau in Canada and the G7 didn't kind of get the message that Trump wants to get rid of all barriers. The same way, I'm sure, with Obrador in Mexico, their industry will come back to some extent if they get rid of the kind of barriers that occur. For example, if I found this out about cars. If you build, say, a car in America, let's say for Volvo or a European car, built in America, let's say a Mercedes, you have to, if you want the seats, you actually send the seat steel, maybe is fabricated in Tennessee. It's sent to Mexico to have the leather put over that seat. It goes back across the border a dozen times. The same way in Europe. That's why this whole thing about Brexit is such a big deal, because you can actually have something go back across the border a dozen times before it's actually installed in the vehicle and actually is sold. And, I mean, this is good for business to realize this, isn't it?
The thing is that there are, in this complex world of advanced technology and machinery, you don't have full set machine tool capabilities anywhere. The United States used to have that. We used to have every aspect of production could be done in the United States. But for a variety of reasons, some good and some bad, that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So the question then is, the same question that came up in the 19th century, which was the Hamiltonians and people like Friedrich List, who said, if you get rid of barriers, you can actually improve the conditions for all nations. But if you don't have the negotiations going on so that you can do that, then you do have to protect your industries. And so Trump is looking at a $350 to $450 billion deficit in trade with China. And he is coming down with a heavy club. I'm hoping that in the negotiations that will continue, that Peter Navarro is not given a blank check, because he is someone who is decidedly hostile to China. Whereas Trump said, look, we're doing this so that the two countries can come closer together. And I think this is the difference between the Chinese view of win-win collaboration versus the model that's being used in the West right now of a zero-sum game. There's going to be a loser, so we have to make someone else be the loser. And this is what free trade was about. It really wasn't free trade. It wasn't fair trade. It was about establishing control over and above nations so no nation could intervene to protect its population.
Right.
And that's the difference.
Yeah, see, we don't want a situation where nations get crushed by this process, but we want to make sure we stabilize the world economy, even currencies. I believe in the Bretton Woods system after the Second World War was a smart idea to kind of fix currency so they can't do currency manipulation, have zero trade barriers between nations, and have true competition, but also allow countries to have things go back and forth across their border. Like if Britain wants to leave for whatever reasons, they don't want to have trade barriers put up so that the Europeans lose greatly from the power of having Britain collaborate with them. Or America, for example, right now Italy is doing a lot of work to collaborate with America on manufacturing and high tech, which they have a pretty big industry in northern Italy, don't they?
Yeah, northern Italy was actually before the United States, they were doing some mass production of aerospace technologies. You have very advanced machine tool capabilities there. You know, in the old days, some of the Italian automobiles were the most hot, finely tuned in the world.
Right.
So, you know, you have these capabilities, and you know, people used to like to get European cars, or in Europe they used to like American cars. You know, we don't have to produce Camembert and Brie if we can get them from France, because we wouldn't do as good a job.
Right.
But we like Camembert and Brie, you know, or other kinds of products, or Italian, you know, olive oil from Italy or Greece. So, you know, there is a global market. Now, the problem is the idea of the global market was taken by the free traders who were part of the unilateral control of the world by America or American-linked companies. And this is what the neocons are about. They're funded by these global corporations that are essentially the new imperial policies. And under Bush and Obama, they had a free hand. Remember, Hillary Clinton said the Trans-Pacific Partnership was the gold standard of free trade deals before she was forced to back away from it because so many Democratic voters didn't like it.
Right.
So, you know, I think Trump needs to do a better job of explaining what he's trying to do. And he also needs to address the problem, which, look, his weak flank is not Mueller, because if Mueller tries to do indictments, it's going to be clear that this is part of a political ploy. Trump's weak flank is the economy. And if Wall Street decides they can't win the 2018 elections for the Democrats by Russiagate, they'll pull a stock market crash. And at this point, with the debt that's being held by corporations, the leverage in banks that's out of control, there very easily could be a financial crisis triggered before or sometime around October, which could swing the election to the Democrats, even though they have no policy for dealing with it.
Right.
So that's why he's got to get on board with Glass-Steagall. He's got to move with a credit policy. And he's got to push the Democrats who say they want infrastructure. He's got to do you guys say this? Well, let's do it. Let's get it done. And I think if he did something like that in September, it could be a real game changer for the November elections.
Yeah. Well, I think that he's on the right track. I think the fact that the Putin meeting, which is happening only about, what is it, a week and a half from now, it's not very far. I think it's about the 16th or 17th.
Ten days from.
And that meeting, by the way, I think will come up with a couple of things. Number one, it should come up with an advancement on the START True Treaty, because the START Treaty is going to sunset, I think, in 2 years. Is that correct? The other START Treaty?
Yeah.
Number two, you're going to start seeing collaboration in terms of energy policy, which is killing Russia and their economy. You're going to see a collaboration in terms of maybe petrochemical and plastics industry and high-tech industries, because the Russians are very good at mathematics, chemistry, and physics. And collaboration in terms of creating new types of industry that can expand across Russia, not only supply Russia with food supplies, but also adjacent countries like China. China's in big trouble because the Gobi Desert's expanding. They're smart enough to contract out to other countries, including South America and elsewhere, to do long-term leases on land to produce food for the Chinese population. And that includes contracts with America to get a lot of our foodstuffs, including pork and other things, so that they don't end up with major problems, because a lot of their agricultural land's been chewed up. A lot of the people are being displaced out of the rural areas with their current policies, which I don't know if they're all very smart, but I mean, there's something wrong with the current policies in China, where they're displacing people from the rural areas rather than fixing the rural areas. So,
well, in fact, there are areas where they are collaborating with German firms, Italian firms, French firms, and upgrading their agriculture. Look, you know where agriculture has really been upgraded recently? Russia. Russia is now the world's largest wheat producer. Because they had to do something with the sanctions and with the attack on Russia, and so they've had very significant gains in agriculture.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing discussion today.
So people should go to LaRouchePack.com. Go to LaRouchePack.com and get some news.
LaRouchePack.com is the place to go. LaRouchePAC.com. This amazing transcript from Roger Stone was done remotely to the Schiller Institute is up. And I guess he's gotten, as he's got it, as they say, the geopolitical philosophy of Lyndon LaRouche and the idea of collaborating to make a stable future in a new world economy and to create new types of collaboration rather than war.
Yeah, he's got it.
Amazing. No wonder he's under attack, isn't it? And by the way, it's not just left and right. It's left and right lies. And the monster, the beast, is about to be slain, including Mueller's Russiagate garbage.
I tried a
powerful universal pathogen killer's latest advance of German-sourced allicin, enzymatically stabilized to clear the body of bacteria, fungi, mycobacteria, and parasites. It penetrates body biofilms and is non-toxic to tissues. Pathogen resistance cannot develop for long-term body-optimized wellness. Clear stealth pathogens that promote autoimmune disease, cancer, and vascular inflammation and plaque and promote healing of tissues. Now pathogen-free. With 200 milligrams more power than prior Alamed, you can't get a more powerful ally to fight daily bugs and serious pathogens. Give your body what it needs. Allicin Med. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutridyne at 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. That's 1-888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.